Welcome to Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast, a podcast focused on all forms of photography and the people who love to create. If you love cameras, analog or digital, old or new, expensive or economical, we welcome you here with open arms. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 94 of Embrace the Grain. Tonight, we have just Jake and I and a super special guest here. It is Dave Marshall from Flick Film. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to finally have you on.
Yeah, for sure.
So you've recently put out a couple new films, I hear.
We did, yeah. We had we managed to cut a great deal with a major North American film manufacturer. I'll let you fill in the rest. And they sold us some 800 speed film stock, which is not a real common stock, but very popular, especially with young people. And we launched that, pretty much launched it 2 weeks ago. A couple of YouTubes came out last few days, and I've been fielding inquiries from all over the world. They had two from South Africa, strangely, on the same day.
Wow.
Yesterday, depending on where the international dateline is, inquiries from Japan, Germany. It's taken off.
I know. I ordered a couple rolls from you here. I got the roll ends to try out. I don't like the big 36s, so the roll ends will be perfect for me to play around with. And my favorite of all time was always 800 speed. Way back when Fuji 800 was a thing. I just loved that film. I'm sad we can't get it anymore.
Yeah, it's a real shame.
But so I'm looking forward to that. It's actually sitting in the post office. I just didn't feel like getting the shovel out today and shoveling out my vehicle to go in there. We had a huge Alberta Clipper blow through. You're probably familiar with those, Dave. And yeah, got about, probably a foot of snow that blew up and around. So we're still digging out.
Yeah, I think it blew up there from here, Sherry. We had a blizzard with a hurricane. So
yeah.
We ended up, it snowed all night and we had no snow on the ground.
Oh, wow.
I think you might have got it all.
Well, we needed it, actually. I would take even more if it wants to do it again. Even though I just got dug out. But anyway, and you also have a psychedelic 400 film that you just come out with.
Yeah, we ended up buying Street Candy. The fellow that started that company, I always thought he was absolutely brilliant. He did a great job of when he first marketed Street Candy, and I really had a lot of admiration for him. And the way he put that together, he created a little cult following. And I actually, in the summer, I ran across a bunch of the film that he had been using for his ATM 400, which was his kind of signature thing. So I just got hold of him, and we hit it off right away. He's a great guy, very imaginative. I really enjoyed dealing with him. And we decided we would joint venture. I would finance it, launch it, and get it going. And he would hop in on his marketing, because he is such a good marketer. And So we got it up and going, but things have changed a lot in Vincent's life since he first launched Street Candy, that being like a wife and child. So I guess, you know, the world got to change for him. And, you know, we've maintained a lot of contact, of course, but one day I just said to him, I said, Vincent, it seems to me you've lost your mojo on this thing. You know, just haven't got the heart for it. And he said, yeah, it's pretty much it, you know, with the young family and all the time involved, he just, you know, couldn't throw himself into it. And he felt pretty badly about it. He's a great guy, and he just felt bad about it and realized that the things were too one-sided. So I said, hey, not to worry. Why don't we just buy you out? So that was, we did. We came to, you know, terms very quickly, stayed very friendly, you know, and he's still, we let him keep a portal open in France, that's where he's from. And so we bought Street Candy, and in order to launch that, I had, and that's some other film stock that I had run across. It was kind of interesting. And so we thought, what the heck, we might as well launch a new color Street Candy. He'd always wanted to do that, and so we did it. And it's a very kind of vintagey looking stock, so we reminded me of magazines you'd see in the 70s, you know, the color magazines.
Kind of had a pastel-y. Yeah, that warm color.
Yeah, sort of a warm pastel-y color to them, you know, and we kicked that around. We have a young lady that works for us that does our graphics, as well as running a film machine. And so she's very imaginative. She's also 21 years old. So when I told her to go look at a Jimi Hendrix album cover, she looked at me like I had two heads. What the heck is that? So we went on the internet and dug up some old album covers and some stuff. And I said, I want a look like this. I want this as a 60s, 70s looking packaging. And then we were digging around for a name. And through all that, Psychedelic 400 came up. And I went, ah, cool, man. Sounds good to me. So yeah. There we have it. So that's just launched. It's hitting, it's down in the, well, across Canada. We actually rolled a small amount for us. So we had a little gap in a day, and we our capacity in our film rolling room is about 6,000 rolls a day.
Wow.
And we really kind of whipped things up a lot. And so we kind of one afternoon, we knocked off a couple of thousand rolls of this stuff, and everybody's kind of having a chuckle about it. I mean, put it in these cool little cardboard canisters and our psychedelic label on it.
That's an awesome looking label.
And we got Leah to make up a brochure. We sent the brochure out to our retail crew in Canada and to the two U.S. Distributors. And we sold out. We sent the... the flyer out at about 11 in the morning. We were sold by 2,000 rolls. So,
wow.
I guess we better spend a little more time rolling Psychedelic Street 400.
Yeah, it's a hell of a response.
No kidding.
It was quite amazing. Yeah, people, it just kind of caught a nerve, you know. And so, yeah, that'll be interesting. So we're, actually today we were rolling. We're just finishing off another 10,000 rolls of it, just see if the market still likes that.
We've lost so many color films over the last few years that having a couple new ones is kind of cool.
Yeah, I would like to extend that. You remember our Electra film we put out in the midst of the great film shortage after the Kodak assembly or a finishing line went down. We kind of caught Kodak's attention with that. I ended up on the phone with one of their executives saying, how are you rolling so much film? And I said, well, I had built machines to do that, and we were kind of just developing an assembly line. At the time I was talking to him, our capacity was about 2,500 rolls a day.
That's still quite an amount.
Yeah, we had to go flat out to fill the Electra 100 market, which is why Kodak sort of sat up, because we were ordering, ordering 76,000 feet of film a month, or every 3 weeks, thereabouts.
Wow. Holy Donna. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot, yeah, and that went all over the world. We were shipping to Hong Kong, Australia, Korea, Europe, all over UK, Europe, all over America, Canada, of course, you know.
Yeah, and so, it's nice when it's so well received.
Yeah, it's a wonderful film, too. Like, it really is awesome. I took some out to shoot a vintage motorcycle event, and it was the first time I'd gone out and shot it just to use as a film stock rather than shooting it for promotional shots, you know. So I went out as a photographer with it, and I was just stunned at how good it is, you know. Well, that's kind of stupid. I mean, I should have done this a long time ago, you know.
Yeah. But you have quite a few other nice little products. I have a bottle of the black, white, and green developer that I quite like.
Yeah. That has a very large following in the world. We actually got into the UK market because of sort of overwhelming, you know, uproar. We want black, white, and green. So I got connected to a film distributor in the UK. Actually, through the Lomography, they helped me find a guy that was their distributor. And it was, I just started sending them all the email or copies of the emails I was getting from people saying, where can we buy this? Where can we buy this? So Steve took a look at all that and thought, well, I guess there is something to these guys. Maybe I should distribute their products. So that was actually what got us into the UK, and with a major distributor.
Yeah, the reason I wanted to try it is it's safe for septic systems. Mm. And I have one.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, you never know, some of these chemicals, you know, is that something I should be rinsing dabs of down into my septic system to sit there for however long?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know.
Some of it's pretty harsh for sure.
Yeah.
You know that the developer in black, white, and green is vitamin C, so you've got a very healthy septic system now.
Probably healthier than me. I don't think I'm going to go take a swig of it, though, to get over my cold.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, the solvent is made for shampoo and hand cream, so I don't think you want to be drinking that.
No. I noticed on your website the other day you are hand rolling 620 film.
Yeah, we actually, we do. It's just hand rolled. We made a couple little machines. It's a lot of handwork. We have two little machines, one to spool it backwards, one to spool it back on again. And so we do a little. We don't do a whole lot. We maybe do, 1,000 a year, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's still good. Worth it.
Yeah. Well, the demand just sits there, so we just keep on, you know, small, but we keep on filling it. My employees hope the demand doesn't grow because they actually don't like doing it.
So are you ever going to maybe expand onto 127 film?
No.
Oh, no, darn.
The world is currently awash in 120 film.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was just having a conversation with a larger company down in the U.S. And I asked them a question. I said, how are your 120 sales right now? And he said, unbelievably slow compared to what it has been in recent years. And I think what's happened, the price of film in general has gone up and up and up, as we all know.
Yes.
And people have, you know, kind of looked at it and said, I can get, you know, I got a 6x7, I can get 10 shots for, you know, $13, or I can get a 35 millimeter roll of film and get 35 shots for the same kind of money. And I think that's happening a lot. The move has kind of gone away
right
from 120.
Yeah.
How about 127?
No, we're never going to do that. That's
rats.
yeah, that is very specialized. There's Ilford makes the film for it, you know, but you got to hand roll it again. You got to put your own backing paper on, and we are no longer able to do that really, really specialized stuff. We just don't have everything we do, you know, we're going to roll close to 1 million rolls of film this year.
Right.
So for a little market like 127, which is maybe, you know, 500 or 600 rolls of film a year. Hmm. It's so expensive for, you know, we can't do it with machinery. We have to do it by hand. Well, little rascals running on my machines make a lot of money when they're running. they do very well when they're rolling film. So it's hard to drag them away from that.
Right.
Yeah, something else. So,
I've also noticed that at one point you used to go down into the southern U.S. and photograph the scenery down there in the desert. Any plans to go back to doing that, or?
I'm going there Friday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm going down for a show, actually. I'm taking 4 photographs down with me, two monochrome, the black and white, and 2 color photographs to enter in a exhibition or a show and in Arizona, in Havasu City, Lake Havasu City.
Right.
And it's a big, I've been in that show before. I belong to the Art Guild down there, and it's a pretty interesting show. They've been doing it for decades, and there's a huge draw into California for that show, and everything that they make in the show, everything that's made in that show, the Havasu Art Guild gives to the scholarships. So I'm a pretty big supporter of that show.
Right. Yes. Yeah, there's some really nice scenery down that way.
I love the desert here. Yeah. I am going to take some Aurora 800 with me, Rollins. I'm kind of like you. It's 36 shots for me is like an eternity, you know. So I kind of like 20, you know, and then I want to take well, 20 shots. That's a lot of shooting for me. But
I kind of wish there were still 12 exposure rolls.
Yeah, you just got to bulk roll them yourself these days, I guess.
I know, I'm just too lazy and I have too much in the fridge.
So when you go out to shoot, Dave, what are you grabbing for a camera typically?
I use generally just 2 cameras. Pentax 645N is my go-to camera. And then I use for 35 millimeter, I use a Nikon D6, and then I also have a Nikon F, plain prism Nikon F, just because I love the feel of it. You know, it's just.
Yeah, they're wonderful cameras.
Yeah. They are.
Yeah. And I like the glass. I like that older glass. I like shooting. If I'm going to shoot, I'll actually be taking that down with me, too, because I'm going to go downtown in the old part of downtown Las Vegas to do some street photography with Aurora 800 and Kodak Double X.
Great choices.
That'll be neat.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. The Nikon F I'll have loaded with Double X, and it's just got a look. It really does have a look, and of course Double X is cinematic, and if there ever was a cinematic place, it's got to be the old downtown Las Vegas.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you go down there shopping, do you ever get it, like, say there's a day where it's not so nice out or it's raining, do you ever hit up the thrift shops down there?
The thrift shops? No, I never. Well, I never did go to thrift shops for cameras. But I do. I found some incredible old photography books. That's much more of my interest, going to thrift shops. And I found some great stuff doing that. But yeah, I've never been a rustling around thrift shops for cameras. But I kind of how can I say this? I kind of like to leave that for people getting into photography and find a little treasure.
Cool.
And when I had my camera store, and I would buy cameras in bulk down south and whatever else. And I thought, well, you can't just kind of grab everything. I want to have more people engaged, so.
Right.
It's reasonable for sure.
Yeah, I think both Jake and I have bought cameras from you before.
Uh-huh. Back when it all started with a little camera store.
Yes. I bought what I call my birthday camera, which was the Nikon F.
Uh-huh.
And Jake, he's...
I got a black F2 from you, Photomic.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Wonderful cameras.
Yeah, there's a certain thing about those old Nikons. I think the sound of the shutters is so incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome for sure, and they've got such a feel to them.
Yeah, they do. Is your F a plain prism Sherry, or is it a Photomic?
It's a plain prism.
Ah, good for you. That's the most, in my mind, that is the most elegant camera ever made.
That is the one that you said that I would need, so that's what I've got.
I sold mine last year, but the Nikon F with an eye level prism is certainly one of the most beautiful cameras ever designed.
It is, and it's comfortable, and it's got that awesome sounding shutter. So,
I don't think mine has ever been serviced. The thing is, it's hardly been used. There's not a ding on it. It's just like in pristine shape.
You know, I actually probably got that camera. I bought Doctor's Estates. I don't know why. I kept on bumping into Doctor's Estates, and they were wonderful.
That's what you said. It came from a doctor's estate.
My memory is good on that one. But I would get these estates, and they would have everything. You know, Nikon F, Photomic, and a F2 and an F2A and an F2S and an F2AS and an F3 and an F4 and an F5. And they'd all be virtually unused, all sorts of lenses and whatever. And then for the wife, you'd buy the Nikon F with the plain prism, because obviously, if you would be too complex for her to have a meter on the camera. It's very strange, but these estate, I must have bought four or five of them that were virtually identical like that. And And they had a knicker mat, because every pro had a backup knicker mat back then, so the doctors had to have a backup knicker mat too. But I always laugh because, you know, some of the plain Prism F would have a little sticker on the back saying Mrs. So-and-so. You know? Okay.
There's no stickers on mine. It's just as clean as could be.
Yeah, I might have had one, Sherry, and it got removed. But, but the funny thing was, you know, the doctors would be buying this and they'd get the wife the one with the plain Prism. But the reality is all the reporters that were running around Vietnam and conflict zones and such, they all use the plain Prism. And, you know, only the less manly men used the Fotomac back then. So.
They were cheating with their photography and their wives were doing it the proper hard way.
That's it. They were the hardcore ones, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I've got a question about the Nikon F that I'm not sure if you would have any insight into, but I've never personally found a Nikon F Fotomac that had a working meter. So I'm just wondering, was it reliable to begin with, or was it something that was kind of touch and go back then even?
I've had a lot of Fs with a working meter.
You have, okay.
Yeah, the Fs did take a mercury battery.
Right, yeah.
So the voltage is a little off, but, you know, the shooting black and white film, for the better part, the, you know, the 0.2 volt difference really wouldn't affect the metering. But, yeah, they were good. They were, for the time, they were an excellent meter. They're just a center weighted meter, so you'd have to kind of know what you're doing to work the meter around. But, you know, it's important to remember too that up until that time most people shot Sunny 16, you
know. Right,
and yeah. Film
some of us still, yeah, some of us still do.
Yeah, I do. I went and shot a whole series in Las Vegas with my Nikon F, and, you know, it, No meter on that, and there's lots of different light in the downtown because of the buildings and such, but you just get used to it, and you can rely on the film to bail you out too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of it is definitely much more forgiving than others.
Uh-huh, yeah.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, with negative film, you can get away with guessing most of the time. Guesstimating, I should say.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, makes me wonder how way back when they would use a Kodak Brownie box camera with slide film and still get a picture.
Yeah, the slide might be a little tough, but I had a guy just down, I had a gallery next to my camera store. When we had the camera, the gallery first, and then we put a camera store in the back of the gallery, and then that grew into flick film, and the gallery's gone. The camera store's gone. But I had there was another gallery just down the road from me, and the guy had a lot of stuff. He was from New Mexico, and he had a lot of Native American stuff. And he came over one day and asked me if I could scan some negatives for him, of negatives from the 1890s.
Oh, wow.
And the lady was another one of those robust lady photographers. She had taken this Brownie box camera across the American Southwest, and she was on what's now the Big Reserve in the Four Corners, and she was photographing Hopi Indian dances and stuff, which was, you know, a real no-no, but the Hopis at that time didn't know what she was doing. And I was scanning these things. They were 6x9 negatives. And the images I got off these things, they were 130 years old.
Wow.
And I was getting just stunning images. It was jaw-dropping, the images that came off that.
Yeah, especially with modern technology, it's pretty amazing what you can pull out of negatives.
Yeah.
It is, but you know, the image still has to be there to pull it, you know. So, and so it was quite a testament, first off, to the The original Brownie box cameras actually had a, you know, a glass lens in them, and they were not the same wretched things that I grew up with, you know, little plastic lens and whatever. But the, you know, the film was 50 speed film, and she was shooting Hopi dancing. Yeah. A 50 speed film.
Well, I've got a whole bunch of photos of my mom when she was little that my grandmother took with a Brownie box camera. And when I look at these negatives and I scan them all, they're perfectly lit.
Yeah.
So I don't know what film she used or anything, because she's long gone, the edges didn't really say anything on them, so I don't know what it was, but they're perfectly lit. And
yeah, probably Verichrome.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was given a camera as a sort of a friend of a friend. Knew I had a camera, so I said, "Oh, I've got this old camera, and you can have it." So she gave me, it was a Brownie box camera from the 50s.
Right, right.
And early 50s. And so, you know, I said, thank you very much, whatever. But there was film inside. So, well, this is interesting. So I very carefully got the film back out. And it was Verichrome, which was a very tough, robust film.
Right.
Lasts forever. And I developed it and scanned the pictures and sent them back to the friend of a friend.
Nice.
And it was pictures of her when she was about 14 years old.
Oh, cool.
And she was 74.
Oh, wow.
So the photos were still there after 70 years of sitting inside that little Brownie box camera.
Just probably just there as latent images for, yeah, six decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably in the closet, too. We're hot and cold. And.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that Verichrome was tough stuff. Kodak made it to put into vacation spots. So, you know, you go out to the lake and you get your cabin at the lake, and there's always a little general store somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that general store would never be assured of selling out their film for the season, so they needed something robust, you know, and they'd shut the store down, and it would, you know, freeze and thaw and whatever through the seasons, and that film would still be there. They didn't have an expiry date on it, and so the stores could have it sitting there for two or three, four, five seasons, whatever, and it was still good. And it was just made for that, and it is tough film. I've had it in the just coming in the States, you know, and you open it up, and there's a, you know, big pile of film sitting inside from the 60s or the 70s. And the Verichrome, I actually had some customers that would just come, you know, I just sent them a quick little email, got some Verichrome in, they come buzzing in and grab the stuff because they love the look of it and the fact that it was, you know, you could shoot 60-year-old film and it was still perfectly good. So.
I think I have six cartridges of 126 Verichrome.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
I found it. So I can't even remember where I found it, but I knew it was supposed to be good stuff, so I scooped it all up. I don't know how it's been stored. It was like 1971-ish.
So it's still young.
Yeah, it should still be good, and I can probably shoot my camera with this stuff.
Yeah, just overdevelop it a couple of stops, and
yeah,
open it up a stop or two, get a little extra light, and I bet you you'll get images.
I thought my mom gave me her old, like, Kodak Brownie Hawkeye that's from the late 60s, so I thought I should try it on one of those. Go out on a sunny day, though.
Yeah, definitely. You need lots of light, but you can definitely. I bet you that Verichrome will have some life left in it.
Yeah.
I shot a roll of 620 Verichrome while getting on 2 years ago now. But yeah, I shot that in my K1 Rolleiflex, and it turned out pretty good for 60-year-old film almost.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, it was amazing stuff.
Yep. And yeah, I'm shot at box speed too, and turned out okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I bought it mainly just to get some 620 spools, but it's nice that the film works too.
Yeah, for sure. You never know when you're buying it. Like, where's it been?
Exactly. You don't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd always laugh. People would come into my store and say, "I've got all this film and it's been in the freezer." Oh, yeah. Sure, it's been in the freezer. It was in the freezer, and then it was on the dashboard of your car, and then it was bouncing around the belt of your camera bag, and then it went back in the freezer.
Exactly. Yeah. Unless you're the one that bought the film and you know how it's been stored the whole time, yeah, you can't guarantee anything for sure.
Exactly. Yep. I've got some Agfa Vista that's in my freezer that I bought it brand new right before they quit making it. I know it's good. I'm still shooting it. And then I've got a bunch of old Fuji Superia that's expired now that I bought it brand new and put it directly into the freezer. So it should still be good.
Uh-huh.
There, you can sell that as freezer kept, and no one can roll their eyes now.
Yeah, it's even the stuff in the green box.
Oh, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Vintage.
Well, I did pick up an estate one time, and then lady said, "Oh, by the way, come on in the kitchen. I got some more stuff for you." She popped open her freezer, and it was chock-a-block full of Tri-X.
Oh, wow.
And it had been there for a long time. I knew the photographer, and that's the only time I've had guaranteed freezer-kept film.
Yeah.
I took it out of the freezer myself.
She was probably happy to have her freezer back.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we have big freezers here because when I buy, if I can buy film stock that we want to, I just bought a pile of the film stock to make ATM 400 Street Candy, and I probably bought more than a couple of years supply. So it is sitting on ice in one of our big freezers.
Cool. So anybody who wants to buy new film stocks or Street Candy or Psychedelic 400 or Aurora 800, they know who to get in touch with. Well, I guess we're coming up here on 37 minutes, so we should maybe get out how people can get in touch with you at Flick Film, Dave.
Well, we have a website, flickfilm.ca, and we also have streetcandy.ca. We don't sell directly to the public, of course, you know, but there is a page on our website that says where to buy, and it's a growing page. We just upped our distribution in America, so we're adding on another 40 or 50 stores to that page. Probably next week. So,
cool. Let's see.
But so, I do answer all emails. So when people email me, I do get back to them.
All major retailers now?
We do. Yeah, Flick Film just only sells to sells to retailers. We have a little lab section, and then we have a school support section. So we do a lot of support with colleges that are big in film, like Nova Scotia, NASCAD, Nova Scotia School of Art and Design, Concordia University. Just a bunch of schools that have big programs.
Nice. So what would you tell a novice that was just starting out? What would you recommend them for a camera and to start out with for a film?
Well, definitely get a manual camera and force yourself to learn.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I would just buy some very inexpensive film. You know, you don't need to be slamming Portra 400 in your camera you're not familiar with, and you're not familiar with photography. Just get some real good budget black and white film and go out, shoot, and be critical of yourself when you look at what you're doing, and see what it is that can make you a better shooter. Eventually you will develop a photographer's eye, and when that happens and you start, you know, being able to see what you're going to get before you actually click the shutter, then go out and buy all sorts of expensive film.
That's when you can buy the Portra 400.
Yeah, or the Ektar.
Uh-huh. Or Aurora 800.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but you have the Rolands. They're not as expensive.
Not even expensive, no.
Okay, so another thing is, so this is another one geared towards the novice. Where would you recommend them going to get their film developed?
Wow.
Or do you have a resource like page made up for that?
Well, I've sent everybody to a small lab in Calgary, Paul Stack Photography, because he's been doing it for 30 something years. He really knows what he's doing, very conscientious. I would send stuff to somebody like that rather than going to your, you know, drugstore or whatever, and because you have a baseline, and the person, you know, the small labs are people that love what they're doing. Mm. You know, they're not kind of like, you know, coming over from cosmetics to start doing your film for you. And that way, you know that if there's an issue with the film, it's probably your fault, not the development. Whereas if you take it some, you know, just sort of some generic place, you never do know what, you know. So find the best lab you can, a dedicated lab, I would say.
Okay.
But better yet, learn to do it yourself.
Right. That's what I had to do because there was no lab. Actually, that just came up on one of the Facebook groups locally here. That topic just came up today, and everybody's saying, send it to McBain's in Edmonton. Send it to McBain's in Edmonton. And she goes, well, can I do it myself? And yeah, you can. It's not hard, but you need to invest in some equipment.
Yeah, you get paid back pretty quick on that. But the biggest thing for me has always been, I want to know if something goes wrong, I want it to be my fault, not somebody else's, you know?
Yeah.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. If you're just starting out, though, I think if you the first five or six rolls, you should maybe send it out before you go and decide this is something I really want to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, get a baseline, find out what you're doing.
Make sure your camera's working.
Yeah, at least for me, it only took paying $15.99 for a scan and develop a dozen times before I decided I was going to find a cheaper way.
Yeah, plus postage for me.
Plus postage, yeah. No, me too, because like you, Sherry, I don't have anybody locally.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually made a product at Flick Film, which was, I've never seen it before, but it's a black and white developing kit, and it's kind of for people starting out.
Yeah.
And it is good for 10 rolls of film, retails at about $19.99, you know, $20. So your cost is $2 a roll, and it's got, you know, good instructions, so it's going to lead you through. It's got developing times for the major films, and that are meant to go with our developer, and the developer is basically Kodak D76 that we make, you know. So it's a very baseline developer, and that's been very popular because it's a little daunting when people walk into a camera store and they want to get some stuff, and the guy behind the counter may not have been around film too much and doesn't really know what to sell, you know. So they don't know about stop bath or, you know, photo flow or which we sell as Slick 200, but the, yeah, it's been kind of popular that people can just walk and grab one product and go out and do the developing, and then they can kind of grow from there.
So have you put together something like a small kit to go along with that, like all their bottles and their flasks and their, all that fun stuff?
We have a, yeah, we have a tool kit, which has got like timer and a good thermometer that won't drown, and bottles and graduate cylinders, and it's pretty much good for anything. So yeah, we've got lots of accessories like that. We really kind of geared everything to all the stuff that had been forgotten when film went through its, you know, sort of real tough years. All the manufacturers disappeared, so we, right, we went and started filling those holes.
Right. Well, I guess anything else you want to add, Jake?
I'm all good on this end.
Okay, well, I guess we'll wrap it up. And Dave, do you have any social media that you would like to add?
Social media? Oh.
Or a website where they can see your photography.
Well, yeah, our website's flickfilm.ca. That's an easy one. Social media, I'm not that good at, so I should actually have somebody here doing it for me, because I'm a horrendous slug with social media.
Anything for your, like, your personal photography, like the exhibitions you're going to put out when you go down south, where people can view that stuff?
Yeah, you know, if I was less of a slug, I'd probably post it. I don't know. Maybe if I win the competition, I'll take a picture of my photo with a ribbon on it or something and post that. But no, I'm brutal with social media. I really am. I have we live by it a lot. YouTube is, you know, a lot of what drives our stuff. But I get other people to do it. We help people sponsor them or you know, give them product to do that. So I'm just I am not a social media guy particularly.
Alrighty then. Well, I guess that's probably it for this episode, and we will catch everybody next time. Stay positive and embrace the grain. Bye.
Thanks again, Dave, for coming.
Oh, you bet, Jake. Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Larry, and I'm a cameraholic. Like many of you, I have too many cameras, from ancient folding roll film cameras to 80s Aero SLRs, classic point-and-shoots, and a bunch of mundane Minoltas. These are not the kind of cameras likely to be carried by a Kardashian, but I do own exactly one trendy, influencer-approved camera. What's even cooler is that I bought it new back in the day. Let me tell you about the Olympus XA. Back in the 80s, I was shooting basketball for my college newspaper. My favorite lens for that was a fast 85mm short telephoto. However, with a lens that long, I kept missing the action that happened right in front of me in the post-game celebrations. With a big tournament coming up, I went to my favorite local camera store to buy a Minolta 35mm lens they promised to hold for me. They didn't hold it. They did have the decency to feel bad about it. The big game was that weekend, and I really needed something. One of the guys had the great idea that the teeny Olympus XA would be perfect for my needs. He let me have it with his employee discount. He had sold my lens out from under me. Anyway, after that, it wasn't too much more expensive than the 35mm Rokor would have been. The XA was my first ever rangefinder, and an odd little rangefinder at that. It took some getting used to. In an arena lit for TV, and shooting Tri-X push-to-stop, I could easily set the aperture to f5.6, tape the focus to the hyperfocal setting, and forget about the rangefinder. It worked. The home team won, and I got a picture of the mid-court celebration for the front page. The camera became my photographic companion for literally decades. It went on vacations, it came to family birthdays and Christmas parties wearing its little dedicated flash. I even kept it in my jacket pocket when I shot my niece's weddings. Just in case. I'm pretty sure the very last 35mm photo I took before succumbing to the lure of digital cameras was made with the Olympus XA. Eventually, that chic little clamshell closed for the last time. The camera was snuggled away in its custom plastic case, placed on a shelf. The fact that I never permanently packed it away is tribute to how much I really loved it. Every so often, I would take the XA out, slide it open, and play with the rangefinder. Thank goodness one of those times I thought to remove the batteries. A couple of years ago, after getting back into shooting film, I brought out the XA. It didn't even need to be cleaned. I dropped in a new battery and the camera sprang to life. Welcome back, little buddy. Not enough waxing poetic. Here's a review of the Olympus XA. The camera is a very compact, aperture priority rangefinder camera. There is no manual mode, and it won't work without a battery, if those things matter to you. The little Olympus is about as small as a full-frame camera can be. It easily fits in a shirt pocket or jeans pocket, even if you wear skinny jeans. The camera has a little more heft than you would think from its size, but it's nowhere near heavy. The clamshell cover acts as an on-off switch and lens cap. The viewfinder shows frame lines, a yellow rangefinder patch in the center, and a shutter speed scale and pointer on the left edge. There is no parallax correction, just marks, but that's almost never a problem. The viewfinder is centered directly above the lens and maybe 2 centimeters above it. That's less than an inch for my buddies in the States. To take a picture, focus with a lever below the lens. Be careful to keep your big clumsy fingers out of the frame. The focus throw is barely 20 or 30 degrees, from a little less than 3 feet to infinity. Choose an aperture from f2.8 to f22 with a lever on the right, and the camera chooses a shutter speed from 1 second to 1/500th. There is a 3-function lever on the bottom that will give you a stop and a half of backlight compensation, beeps to test the battery, and sets the self-timer. And a little bit of genius from the famous Yoshihashi Miyatani, the self-timer lever acts as a teeny tabletop tripod. Speaking of genius, let's talk about the shutter release. The bright orange button controls an electromagnetic switch with such a light touch that just thinking about pushing it can make the shutter fire. It's sweet, but be careful. It's too easy to shoot too soon. The shutter is very quiet. This would be a great street photography camera. Film advance is accomplished with a serrated wheel rather than a lever, but that's okay. It works. The Teeny Zuiko 35mm 2.8 lens is amazingly compact and sharp. Miyatani wanted to make the XA as small as possible, but didn't want a collapsible lens. So technically, the 35mm lens is a telephoto, meaning that it is physically shorter than its focal length. But enough of that nerdery. The diaphragm consists of 2 L-shaped blades, so your bokeh balls will be square. This is not the camera for those dreamy background kind of portraits. The XA has a small cult following. We really love our small cameras, but I do have to share a few cons. I've mentioned a couple. It's ridiculously easy to get a finger in front of the lens, and the shutter release is so light that you will get an accidental exposure or two on every roll. The rangefinder is pretty hard to use too. With its short baseline, low contrast patch, and short focus throw, I find myself searching for focus almost every time I use the rangefinder. Luckily, if you set the camera to f5.6 or higher, set the focus scale to the orange number, it becomes a point and shoot. I keep a piece of gaffer's tape on the back of mine to hold the focus lever in place. I suppose the flash situation could be considered a con. None of the XAs have a hot shoe, or a cold shooter for that matter. Olympus made 2 dedicated flash units that screw onto the side of the camera. I have the smaller A11 flash, which runs on 1 AA battery. Attaching the flash makes the camera only slightly less pocketable, but you pay for the small size with a high risk of red eye. I'm really surprised that Vivitar or someone didn't make a screw-on hot shoe adapter for the XA back in the day, but I've searched and I've never found one. The proprietary flash is barely even a con. I often leave mine attached as an extra grip to lower the risk of fingers wandering in front of the lens. 5 different models wear the XA badge. Mine is the original XA, the only one with a real rangefinder and aperture priority exposure. Do not confuse the XA with the XA1. The 1 is a shadow of the true XA, with a fixed focus f4 lens, a crappy shutter button, limited shutter speeds, and a selenium meter. Seriously, a selenium meter in 1982. That's just sad. The XA2 is better than the 1, but lacks a real rangefinder, relying on the mountain 3 blokes, 1 bloke scale. Rather than the XA's 6-element f2.8 lens, it has a 4-element f3.5 and programmed exposure. The XA3 appears to be exactly like the XA2, with the addition of DX coding for film speed. The XA4 is also a scale focuser, but with a 28mm f3.5 that focuses down to about a foot. If you get one of these, try to find the original wrist strap. It's the perfect length to act as a close focus aid. My XA is black, but I hear they come in a few colors, including off-white, pink, blue, and a hot fire engine red. The XA is an example of good industrial design. You can see seeds of the much-loved Infinity stylus point-and-shoot cameras in the XA. I've had both of them, and I like the XA a lot better. If I remember correctly, my XA cost about $150 new in 1983. An online inflation calculator tells me that would be nearly $480 2024. Since I have owned it more than 40 years, that's like a dollar a month. Sounds pretty frugal to me. I think I'll ask Sherry for a special dispensation to use the XA as next year's Fugle Film project.
That's all, folks.